19. Locke looked at the paladins surrounding Archvoyant Savard. They were all men in the prime of their lives, healthy and hearty, and well-dressed in formal suits of black or subdued grey. Each also wore a pin or pocket kerchief emblazoned with the logo of the Festival of Excellence, as well as a paladin band over his sleeve. The lone exception was Naria, who wore a long backless gown the colour of chocolate, accented with a silk wrap done in the Republic's colours. She wore no paladin band, but her crystal lenses glinted as she held up the elf charm she just plucked from Locke's hand.
"If you'd like to make a purchase," the dragon puppet roared on both illusionary screens, "contact one of our staff. Items can be brought right to your seat."
Archvoyant Savert smiled at the crowd and then turned to Locke.
"We expected you."
"Lesigoris," Locke guessed. "I see you've picked a new thrall." One of the nobles chuckled, and Locke looked over to see that it was the man Lesigoris had possessed earlier.
"You think I'd ride the Archvoyant?" he asked, shaking his head. "Guards watching me all the time, meetings over mortal matters, public speaking events where I hug your children. Do you know how much power I'd have to give up if I became the Archvoyant?"
"Actually," Locke said, "I just wanted to make sure I had the right target." Her walking stick snaked out, hooked Naria's hand and yanked the elf charm free. Locke smashed it open as it hit the ground. Naria flinched and went stiff, one hand going to her face.
"We did offer you the same upgraded wards we used to protect ourselves, Baroness de Lockenville," Lesigoris said. "If you'd allowed us to augment your lenses, they'd be working right now."
Naria turned her head toward Lesigoris. "You understand, of course, why I chose not to avail myself of your offer." Lesigoris nodded in her direction, then turned to Locke.
"Mr. Lively wasn't happy when your friend Captain Pyvick used the elf charm against one of us. I'm afraid those are off the table for you now. Congratulations on blinding your sister, though."
Locke's grip tightened on her walking stick. "Then we do this the hard way." In the stands behind her, the crowd cheered as an athlete did something impressive.
"One against six, Locke. Long odds, even for you."
Lesigoris gave his thoughtful nod.
"Besides, it makes for bad visual, half a dozen men beating down one helpless woman. Mr. Slant would be so disappointed with me."
From the corner of her eye, Locke saw movement on the glamour screens. She looked over to see herself on both of them, looking angry and grim, confronting a group of men who gave her mild and nervous smiles.
"Here's how this is going to go, Captain Locke," Lesigoris said in a reasonable voice. "You're going to get out of the stadium as quickly as you can. If you escape, and that's unlikely, you can continue your campaign of harassment, and the leaders of the Republic will make sad speeches about crime and bring up tough new legislation that hits Urijar neighborhoods harder than anyone else. If we catch you, everyone in this stadium, and everyone watching the glamour screens we added to every puppet show in the Republic, will see your reign of terror brought to an end, as the dawn of a new, more civilized way of life."
Locke forced herself to smile, and watched as her illusionary self on the screens did the same. "When you put it that way, I've got no reason at all to run." Lesigoris gave her his thoughtful nod.
"I assumed you'd want to minimize the fatalities caused by the horrific attack you and your band of monsters orchestrated."
With an enormous roar, Mr. Dragon flapped into view over the stadium, his red scales shining gold with each flap of his rainbow glowing wings. The crowd screamed as he let loose a brilliant burst of fire that scorched the top rows of seats. At this distance, it was almost impossible to be sure, but Locke thought she saw chains of silver about his throat.
"Mr. Skinner is good with animals," Lesigoris said. "Now it's coming for you, but it's going to hurt a whole lot of innocent people on the way."
The ground underneath Locke began to shake. "Sir," Naria said, smiling politely, "was the stadium field constructed using earth demons?" Her lenses seemed to have recovered. Lesigoris turned to her as a shaking intensified.
"It was, Baroness. Why do you ask?"
"Issa, in her never-ending quest to make as many enemies as possible, has a demon that wants to kill her. She was wearing a demon ward charm to hide herself from it," Naria said, and then held up a small necklace.
but it seems to have come off when she tried to assault you.
Maria, Locke said quietly, you're making a mistake.
I apologize if this is too forward, Naria said to Lesagoras. But is it possible that Locke's vicious attack on the patriotic people of the Republic included a demon as well as a dragon?
A great rocky fist burst from the earth.
You know, Lesagoras said, I believe it is.
With a last bitter glance at the screens, Locke ran.
Crap, Tern muttered. And Icy first looked over to see if something was wrong with her rope, then looked up and saw the scorpion and the troll 100 feet above them atop the fens. Ululenia dove in with a keening shriek, but before she struck, the troll lashed out with a great ropey arm and slapped Ululenia from the sky.
Crap, Tern said again.
The troll looked different than she had the last time Icy had seen her. Her skin had a metallic sheen to it, and looked more like a bundle of ropes than anything trying to imitate a person. Icy only spared her a passing glance, however, because the scorpion was sawing at the rope holding Tern up.
Crap!
Tern yelled. With one hand she snapped her belt lock into place, and then kicked off the glowing cliffside toward Icy's rope. She was still swinging when the rope snapped. Icy lunged, threading one ankle through his line as he dove with both hands. He caught Tern's wrist, and both of them swung back down and bounced jarringly off the wall.
Crap, crap, crap!
Tern worked her free hand through Icy's rope and hooked her legs around it as well. Icy let go of her other hand once she had herself secure, hooked his other leg through the rope, and did the equivalent of an upside-down sit-up to haul himself upright again. The scorpion hopped over to the other rope, raised a claw, and then shrieked as Ululenia reappeared as a great white beast that snarled and dragged the creature back out of view. That left only the troll, who took hold of their rope and began to slither down it like a snake, far faster than Icy and Tern could manage.
Crap!
Icy looked down and saw that Tern had her crossbow out and was trying to aim it up at the troll, but he was blocking her shot. He flung himself over to the side, holding onto the rope with one hand and leaving a foot hooked through to support him, and Tern fired a shot that zipped up, thunked into the troll and bounced away with no evident effect.
Crap!
The scorpion leaped over the wall. At first, Icy thought Ululenia had flung it from the wall, but then he saw the trail of clear, sticky fluid trailing from beneath its tail. The scorpion landed on the side of the cliff, supported like a spider on a line of webbing, and began to scuttle down toward them. A moment later, Ululenia flapped back up into view, her wings fluttering weakly, and with a pale yellow-green mist coiling around her. For a moment it seemed as though she might recover, but then her wings faltered, and she lurched drunkenly through the air and sailed down past them. Tern fired another bolt past Icy, and this one hit the slithering troll with a splash. A moment later another bolt sank into the troll, who caught fire just as she had back in Lockenville. This time, however, the flames did not seem to hurt her, and the troll paused, flinched, and then slowly began to slither down again.
Crap!
Tern hissed, and Icy saw that the now-on-fire troll was setting the rope they were hanging from aflame. Icy pulled himself back in and hauled himself up, hand over hand, as quickly as he could. The troll was coming toward him, and the scorpion was doing the same, and it was going to be a matter of very careful timing. The scorpion was now lower than the troll, and its claws clicked against the smooth surface of the cliff as it made its way closer to their rope. With the troll above, the scorpion would be free to cut the rope without endangering its comrade, and Icy pulled himself up, braced himself on the wall, and then leaped at the scorpion. He caught it by the claws, heard it chitter in surprise, felt its web line bounce and flex with a sudden additional weight, and then pulled himself up quickly as the web line rebounded, bringing his body high enough to kick his feet off the claws, lunge up past the stinger, and catch hold of the line of webbing, which was moist but not sticky beneath his hands. With a shriek of anger, the troll leaped over onto the scorpion's web line as well. She was still on fire, and whatever the webbing was made from was more flammable than rope, because flames immediately spread up and down the web line. Icy leaped free as the flames reached the scorpion, and the shriek was cut off by a muffled explosion that Icy didn't really pay attention to, because he was trying very hard to catch the rope Tern was hanging from, and he hadn't had a lot of power behind the leap. He made it, caught the rope with one hand, slammed into the wall, and felt his hand still slick from the scorpion's webline slip free. He heard Tern's gasp as he fell past her, saw the flutter of the rope she had originally been hanging from, and which was still threaded through her belt, and hoped she had a tight grip as he grabbed it.
"Crap!"
she yelled overhead, and Icy felt her slide, then catch herself, but the slide had thrown off his own grab due to his still slick fingers, and he threaded one leg through the rope as he fell, felt it catch, and felt Tern catch. Then Icy was hanging upside down, suspended by one leg from Tern's belt, while she and Tern clutched desperately at the rope that was still aflame over their heads. Looking up, and now slightly dizzy, which was a sensation Icy had thought trained out of him decades ago, he saw the troll clinging to the remains of the scorpion's flaming webline. The scorpion was gone, and the line itself ended in black, charred fragments. Up above, Tern was trying to reach into a pocket and get one of her flasks without losing the grip that was holding both her and Icy up. She got a pocket open, worked the flask out, and then banged off the wall with enough force to jolt the flask from her fingers.
Crap!
It tumbled lazily past Icy, and he kicked his free leg off the wall, loosened his leg grip on the rope, and caught it between two fingertips. A twist of the leg tightened the rope with a sudden yank that would have pulled a weaker man's hip from his socket, and Icy flung the flask back to Tern as he swung back down. He saw her catch it and douse the contents over a bolt, after which he hit the wall, almost losing his leg grip. Icy then hooked an elbow through the rope and stabilized himself. As he looked back up, the troll coiled herself like a spring and then leaped from the flaming webline back to their rope. Tern's shot caught the troll square in the torso, splashing inky black liquid across her body. The troll reached the line, slipped past it with her slippery arms, and screamed as she slid down the wall, leaving behind a trail of black oil. She whooshed past Icy, tumbled free from the wall, and began a low, trailing drop to the ground below. The troll's impact on the rope had been minimal, but apparently minimal had been what the rope had left to give, as one of the burning cords snapped. Icy bounced back against the wall, still upside down, focused his mind to its utmost emptiness, embraced the rope from which he hung and the stone of the wall, and turned, yelling, "Crap!" above him, found his center, and struck. His hand punched a chunk out of the smooth surface of the cliff. He recoiled, focused, and struck again as another cord snapped. The third and final cord snapped free, and Icy crossed his arms, plunged his hands into the two handholds he had made, and allowed his body to do what it did best. Very few people can consciously catch one handhold upside down, then turn right side up while falling, much less two handholds, much less while maintaining a leg grip on a rope, from which a good friend is hanging by a belt loop, while falling by, banging into the wall, yelling, "Crap!" and subsequently bouncing back and forth below. Icy kicked a foothold into the wall with his free foot, looked down to see Tern dangling alive and unharmed from the rope below him, and took a deep, refreshing breath to relax for a moment before figuring out how they were going to get the rest of the way down the cliff. In the sudden silence, a strange slapping noise was audible, and Icy looked over, careful not to make any motion quick enough to dislodge his handholds. A shining white lizard, slightly larger than a person, was climbing up the side of the cliff, the cups on its wide and padded feet giving it purchase on the sheer surface. A blazing rainbow horn shone on its forehead. It also had a great distended belly, and a pair of scorpion legs, still twitching, protruded from its mouth. Ulilenia padded up the wall, looked over at Icy with one strangely rotating eye, and said,
"Next time, may I suggest we use the giant eagle?"
Kale was ambling toward the big gold cup with a fountain of fire coming out of it when Mr. Dragon roared in over the stadium. As the crowd in the stands began yelling and everyone in the field stopped whatever sporting event they were in the middle of and started running, Kale nodded to himself and rolled out his shoulders. There were guards at the font, which was bigger than it had looked from a distance, and was indeed set into the ground instead of resting on top of it. The guards were big men, but they weren't paladins, which was something.
"Stay back," one of them called as Kale got closer. "This area is off limits for safety."
"There's a dragon, man," Kale yelled, looking
looking back over his shoulder as Mr. Dragon began torching the seats and ripping things up.
There's a dragon. I can't go that way.
Sir, please. This is a sensitive area.
One of the guards looked nervous and also didn't have a hand on the blade at his waist yet.
Get back, or we will use force,
the other one shouted, and he looked more angry than nervous.
But it's a dragon, Kale yelled at the angry one as he moved those last few crucial steps.
And they eat virgins, man, and I haven't ever told anyone this, but your mother never let me go all the way. The big angry one blinked, got it, went for his blade, and Kale punched him in the throat, kicked him in the groin, kneed him in the head, and drew the man's blade as he fell, bringing it up level with the other guard, as his blade was half out.
Let me be real clear, buddy, Kale said. I am not the bad guy here. There's a dragon attacking, and that ain't on me.
That crowd could use a guard to get people to safety and help the injured right now. That's a place you could do some good.
Right here, all you get to be is the unlucky asshole I took down on my way to stop the bad guy,